I'll begin the discussion with a few general remarks on replicable wormholes in Decida and perhaps in cosmologies. And maybe after, during the discussion, after I finish, I want everyone to talk. Yeah. Most of the discussion will based on Huan's string talk in last year, and also our paper about the replicable wormholes. There's a section talk about Decida. So we've been talking about replicable wormholes for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and I think most of the discussion is concentrated on how it's related to the page curve and the black hole information paradox. I want to draw one lesson from the thinking about replicable wormholes in the black hole context. And that lesson is how we should think about quantum gravity. I think replicable wormholes tell us one rule, one important rule of the quantum gravity is that we should sum over all geometries that are compatible with our boundary condition. Then we use the usual rule of low energy effective theory calculations, and those things give us surprising results.
Does that include things that don't get connected at all to the boundary, or only the things that are connected to the boundary?
Sorry, say again?
I mean, it would be in principle compatible.
Oh, yeah, in principle, you can sum over all the not connected to the boundary. Yeah,
sum over that.
Yeah.
And then you can have, in principle, any dimensionality of that pocket sort of baby universe and just.
Right. I want to talk about that like independently. Right now, that seems. Okay, Don will have, and Henry will have different opinions. And seems to me that it's already enough to consider about the geometry that connected to the boundary.
The things that don't connect to the boundaries, because you always normalize everything, it's like summing up the bubbles in quantum field theory that normalize the vacuum. They drop out of physical things.
Yeah. Okay. But you can ask whether there's those alpha states where some hidden.
If things actually connect, then it.
Yeah.
So what quantity are you computing? You're computing a Wheeler-DeWitt wave function?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So let's first review like how in black hole case, and then talk about in Decida. And
sorry, but are you talking about, this may be a follow up to Eva's question, but are you talking about any observable at all in any theory? Because I think we know that sometimes if we include all the geometries, we get the wrong answer. Sometimes we include all the geometries, we get the right answer. So I don't think this is just a rule that we can apply as a general. In general, to every situation.
Like, what have in mind is that we include the average geometry, you get the wrong answer?
Right, okay.
So if you really want to get these fine structures, then I think the rule is we do not exclude those geometries, but we add more stuff. But those are, to me, right now, away from the description of the low energy effective theory. But it's definitely good for something, right? For example, in the black hole case, we can have first talk about the spectral form factor. Or late time two-point function. There we include the geometry that the trumpet geometry that connects these two asymptotic boundaries. Of course, this is not enough, as you guys were pointing out, because it does not give you this fluctuation region, but it gives you the average ramp-time plateau. And for the rate time two-point function, we are summing over like the another continuation of this geometry. And So second application in Blackhole is the page curve, where we summing over the all the replica geometries. One we consider about trace row to the n. There's some kind of connection. Those geometry are will be some round saddles if we want to include two required factorizations, but nevertheless, by consider about those geometries seems to give us something we thought we couldn't get purely from low energy effective theory description.
Why would they be wrong if we require factorization?
Well, you will talk about the therapeutic geometries. In our model, it will be wrong because there are no couplings, matter couplings. You think about the twist operators will couple to matter.
Well, there are many copies, and the twist operators in the matter region couple all the different copies. Right?
Yes.
And then there is a geometry that connects them. Mm-hmm. I don't see.
Well, but
there might be other calculations where these geometries.
Well, the same geometry applied to another calculation where things you thought to factorize does not factorize.
Okay, yeah, maybe we should discuss this other one, but this one I think.
Okay.
Are you thinking of the West Coast model or the East Coast model?
Any model.
Both models.
Both models are the same.
There is a problem with factorization in just this picture. Maybe there is some other. If you want to calculate a particular matrix element, then you have a...
Yes.
Yeah. Wait, you guys are talking about this disconnect between the overlap psi I psi j and psi I psi j
square. Yeah.
And whether or not there was an ensemble average involved?
Yeah.
Okay. And what, say again, what was the conclusion? I thought there was...
Well, there, if psi I psi j, without ensemble average, then psi I psi j is equal to zero, then I said it squared will equal to zero, and we find it's not zero.
Right, right.
So that seems required.
But I don't understand. If there's a contradiction there, why can't you put a contradiction into this quantity, which is determined by that quantity?
If you're only applying this feature when you sum over a and j, then there is no problem. It's only if you try to apply a feature like this for specific I and j's. And in their model, they can do that in a more general situation. We discuss, you cannot do it.
We use the East Coast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone finds out how to do it. So it's just simply you cannot do the calculation. It's not
the issue.
Answer. Maybe it gives us an answer once you learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, really sorry to belabor this, but the model is different enough that you, both statements are right.
Their model is more calculable, so you can do more calculations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, presumably some complicated calculation in our model, you can also show that in the product is not zero. Mm-hmm. Agree? Okay. Well,
but it's a different calculation that has the problem. So than this one. I mean, just the page one does not suffer from this problem.
Right. But yeah. But those are all applying this rule for our quantum gravity rule. So the discussion I want to ask is, how does this rule apply in cosmology and de Sitter space? In some sense, this rule has already been applied in our study of cosmology, where it is given by this Hartree-Hawking proposal. Of the no boundary proposal of the state of our universe. The no boundary proposal says the state of our universe is given by summing over all past geometries that are compatible with our future boundary condition, without including any finite boundary condition at the past. So say our future time size have a 3-manifold, then we sum over all the geometry in the past that are compatible.
All right, so here you're doing some intermediate step in that, as we all know, that future boundary, even though it looks like it might be some frozen thing, it ultimately isn't. You gotta ultimately integrate over that.
Right, so here this is for this state cosine, right? For each element of the state, you're summing over all the geometries. And yes, as you were saying, when we do actual calculations, we take in the product of the Poisson with itself.
Yeah, sorry, I have another question.
But we set some projection operators for any calculation because we're asking probabilities of some things.
Uh-huh. Well, another point is that this, as you say, is some proposal. Just for the record, what we do in cosmology isn't contingent on this proposal. Meaning, you know, inflation is kind of an attractor, so you could start from some much more general initial state and still have compatibility with everything that's ever observed.
Right, then you need to specify the initial boundary condition.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a very strong assumption, just for...
I don't think it's so strong. Well, the inflationary calculation relies on an assumption which is also, which is part of this.
I know what you're saying, I think. The bunch Davies vacuum would be this. However, as you also know, the bunch Davies, you can go very far beyond the bunch Davies vacuum and still get, say, everything we observe and infer. For example, lately people have done extremely wild initial conditions with, you know, GR, whatever, even like numerical GR in there. And, you know, talk to Leonardo Sartori, it's a little more Raphael. Clever here, and so there's no sense in which you must start with a bunch of Davies vacuum.
But then the question I think is who pick up the initial state?
I think you start with the Euclidean vacuum at short distances, and that is
short distances. Yeah.
So how do you
get? Yeah, but that is what this is just a minor generalization of that.
But how do you get something that's never time reflection invariant on a slice? I mean, how do you get something that's always expanding, does not have a Euclidean? A section that you could continue to
maybe Shenbin will discuss that.
So you're focusing on the expanding part of the universe.
But don't you start from something that's locally static?
That's the project.
It's more general than the Sitter case where you can, I mean, it's the idea that, well, maybe Shenbin will discuss it more. But,
no, I'm not discussing it more.
Yeah.
You can
just so I can understand what you're saying, Juan. I mean, I doubt you're saying the following, but just correct me if I'm wrong. Does anything we know, really know empirically, dictate that this is the right state?
Well, it depends on what you point to this. I mean, of course, we don't live in a compact. If you think that you need a compact universe, then we know we empirically have a measured compact universe. I don't know. But I don't think the idea behind this requires a compact universe.
No, I'm not worrying about the compactness. I just mean, it's certainly not precisely this in the sense that, again, you could have, at short distances, we all agree there's no trans-Planckian issue, blah, blah, blah. But there is a distinction between the states that are pristinely this and the states that are excited relative to this.
I would say that all of our measurements are compatible with this.
Certainly, but they're compatible with other.
They're compatible.
So, is this discussion critical for what Shenbin's going to say? Is he really? Did you really mean to say that this is the only state we're allowed to talk about, or you just wanted to say let's consider this state and move forward?
Fine.
Well, this, first of all, this is a discussion section, so I
try to have
a discussion. What I'm saying is this seems to be a preferable state to consider given the lesson from Replicator and Wormhole.
And those things are still meant to be just Euclidean, or they're really complexified?
Well, they're the Euclidean geometry, and when you have then you do a continuation to the Lorentzian Lorentzian evolutions, and then you project into the branch that it's only expanding, so the wave function will be complex.
Oh, so you do want to do this projection into the branch where it's only expanding?
Yes.
Well, let's see, what is exactly the lesson from here? Maybe, I mean, in this case, there are other boundaries, right? Could there be some other boundaries in the past, maybe going to the Euclidean directions and so on?
Other boundaries in the past, what do you have in mind?
Well, that when you do this Euclidean evolution, you have maybe some other regions that go into the idea, Euclidean ideas and have some other boundaries.
Right, okay, so that comes to the next point. Yeah, as Eva has said, and actually Page and Don Page and Hawking also make this important observation.
It's 1986,
1987. Is that for every observables, we need to take an inner product of the state with itself. So we have say, any operators O, then the calculation we are doing will be requiring take inner product of the Hodge-Hawking state with itself. So that's an important lesson because this, if you only restrict on this geometries, that is I should say the following. That this observation means that to our observables, what really matters is not the state itself, but the density matrix. And the density matrix have two boundaries. One is the bra, future time slice corresponding to the bra, and the one is corresponding to the ket. And using our rule of summing over all geometries, there's no boundary proposals, then we should summing over other geometries that's compatible with, other geometries that's compatible with our boundary conditions, and maybe others. So this is what I will call as a no boundary proposal for the density matrix.
Is this saying the universe has to be in a mixed state?
This one, because you are, this one will give you a mixed state.
Right.
Because you can think about it as tracing out this pair created this universe and another universe, you trace out to another universe. So the semi-classical calculation will give you a mixed state.
But you're arguing that that's somehow a consequence of this philosophy of summing over all geometries,
yes.
That the universe has to be in a mixed state.
Yeah. So that is a natural conclusion, and that was described by Hawking in his paper as the same as a Bracco information paradox in cosmology.
Unless you're going to say what I'm about to say, I want to comment with Gary that what Chintin said, I think, is that that particular term would be interpreted as universe being in a mixed state. But I think it's true that if you sum over all allowed terms, including disconnected geometries, that in fact this density matrix of the universe is exactly the same as the density matrix you form from the pure state, which is the Hartle-Hawking wave function, if you think that that also includes a sum over disconnected final.
I don't think that's what I'm going to say, but maybe what you are going to say. Okay, well.
So interpret it as if you interpret the no boundary wave function as something that defines a state on all possible universes, then I think this density matrix is the same state and is actually pure.
I finish my thought, maybe Dan will talk about his perspective. I haven't fully understand that. We talk briefly, yeah.
Well, just to be clear, so this is a postulate. It's not something you derive from something else or some other.
It's a postulate, But those are the preferable rules that's given by this given by that.
What are you pointing to over there? Sorry.
Yeah, we are already taking this rule seriously.
Oh. let's see. So, meaning, you might have some other state, some other wave function, which has, you know, some support on that geometry, but with a different bottom, you know, that does have some
different bottom. Yeah, well, you can contain some heterogeneous.
Or some singularity or something that you know.
Well, we want a smooth geometry, so.
In other words, fine. You're insisting that it be smooth, that it not have any even potentially resolvable singularities or.
Yeah, well, in the low energy effective theory description. So.
It's kind of a theory of initial conditions. I mean,
right.
Well, yeah, but it's. Never mind. We had this discussion already, but it's a very special choice of those.
Yeah, okay, but let's. Well, you can also think about. I don't know, those has some special geometries very close, but those look like enough for the for most of the paradox. Right?
Probably once you pick what rules you allow, you make a choice of what sort of singularities are okay, which ones aren't. I think that probably everything you say will work as long as you stick with the same set of rules all along. Right? Okay. Nothing will depend on the details of whether or not.
You're saying for any wave function there will be some story like this?
I think that's.
So if you calculate the purity,
right? Yeah. Well, I'll go to that. Right. Okay. But I'll just talk about what happened in the 1980s.
So the conclusion is that you're in a mixed state. If you pick this state, but what makes you pick? Why not just project and have the pure state and just compute?
Oh, I mean. This isn't a well-defined operation you can do, right? If you have your state has how do you project to the pure heart? If you're given this state, what projection you need to do to project out those states?
Do we know all the geometries here, or is like in quantum field calculation we only know at tree level?
Well, so this is a general argument. So your question is applied to specific models. Well, in specific models, we know other geometries. And in like very special models, we know. But here, this argument is like general argument.
Okay.
So and the general argument will be this will include those geometries, and we'll continue from there.
I didn't understand the answer to the question about projecting. Given any row, why can't I just? And given a psi that I like to project onto, why can't I just project rho onto, you know, the projection operator onto psi?
But this psi is not a local projection, right?
Who said local? What's local have to do with it?
Okay, well,
folks, I think this is getting a little out of hand.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just reviewing what happened at those days. So there's two questions I want to raise. One question is what Hawking raised, or what another question is Page raised. So question one is why our universe is a mixed. Not our, but where is this universe? Is mixed. And Hawking says it's the same as the black hole information paradox. And the question two is, which is more operational, is the density matrix positive definite? So by this rule, the density matrix will be manifestly real as long as the integration contour respect to complex conjugate. But no one guarantees that the density matrix gives you positive eigenvalues. And if you really want it to be a description of some probability, you want it to be positive. And Page considered about this, and he didn't find a clue, and he said this might restrict possible theory of gravity to be able to describe by those states. And now it's like 30 years later. I think we have some answer from the replicable wormholes. Our answer from the replicable wormholes is that this Bessel matrix is positive definite, and actually it's pure. So this follows from the density matrix pure. If it's pure, then the eigenvalue is equal to 1, so it's positive definite. Which picture? This picture or that picture?
The first term in your sum.
This term?
Yeah.
Well, this is the pure, and this is...
Well, no, but you're saying that the whole sum is pure, so there is another basis in which you can rewrite it. Maybe that's the real definition of the Bunce-Davies state?
You will say it's not.
No?
Yeah. It's not that simple. So density matrix, you look... It's like in black hole case, when you look at the density matrix of the Hawking radiations, in the usual description, you got a maximum mixed state. Not maximum, like you got a mixed state. And then you calculate the Rennie entropies, you find it's zero, the von Neumann entropy. That's the same rule. Yeah, so to prove that it's pure, we should really look at what is its Rennie entropy. So we should compare about trace rho to the n versus trace rho to the n. So when we consider about its nth Rennies, we are considered about the description is we have n boundaries, and then we trace over. We do this following grouping. So this first one grew, first cat grew with second bra, and the second cat with third bra, and then we trace over the rest. And for trace rho to the n, we are just tracing over all the boundaries by themselves. And because of the, for the Rennie calculations, for each different replica, there's secret symmetry, so I can just bring this over, and these two boundary conditions become the same boundary conditions. So in other words, I can always write trace rho to the n times trace rho to the n. In terms of boundary description, they are trace rho to the n plus m, and when I take m goes to minus n, I'm calculating trace rho to the n. I got 1. So this finishes our proof for this statement. That the density matrix, although it looks mixed, but actually it's a pure density matrix. And in addition, it's a positive definite.
So if we put finite boundary conditions that would correspond to let's say, the static patch of the sitter.
Static patch, okay.
Yeah. There, how many people say that's a mixed state? Would this argument say it's a pure state also?
What particular boundary condition are you thinking about?
Let's say I have a universe whose size is let's say some length which exactly fits in the static patch.
Yes.
And positive osmotic constant.
Right, so we've discussed that for a while, right? Seems by the rule it will be a pure.
But isn't it different? I mean, here you're not tracing out part of the universe. In the static patch case, you're tracing part of the universe.
Yes.
So I don't think the same argument would apply.
I haven't done that calculation, but I think our model is like the static, this static patch case, and there it's pure, right? I need to, well, maybe, because it's a discussion, maybe you want to come and...
But how could the static patch be pure? Because then the other static patch would be pure, and you'd have a singularity at the bifurcation point where they meet. I mean, if the state is somehow regular on all of the sitter, it seems...
Well, I think that's the issue, is they're talking about a state that would not be regular, but looking about both what one said.
I think what Ron said is important, that you're tracing out part of the universe.
Yeah.
So the boundaries are a little different because you are connecting them.
Yeah.
You're connecting the boundaries a little bit.
Well, right, but that's where the question is, right, is what state you're talking about. You have to be very careful about specifying that here. Whether it's a global vacuum or not.
So that makes sense. So when you consider everything, it will be pure. When you consider a proportion, then
right. Because of this growing condition, you don't have a.
You don't have this disjoint.
Yes.
Right. Are you going to comment here on the fact that your trace rho to the n is not.
Trace rho to the n.
It's not a trace rho by, you calculate trace rho by itself,
yeah.
And then raise it to the n?
Yeah.
Because the different powers are connected by whirlpools?
Right. I'll comment on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you already commented on that. So this is the same issue as how do we make sense of if like in spirit of, any spirit of like pure quantum theory, quantum gravity theory, how do we make sense of this statement? Is if we only consider about trace rho, then we have two boundaries, then we just have the like whatever this geometry is. But if we have trace rho squared, now we have four boundaries, then there could be this new geometry. So this is not equal to trace rho squared.
Wait, what is the
right? I wrote the same thing, but yeah, different.
The formula does not make sense as written. I think you could put in some angle brackets.
Well, so you are advocate of disordered average now.
Well, I think that's the only way in which they make sense. Otherwise,
I don't need to do an angle bracket. I can do bar.
Fine.
Can I go back to the previous point just to make sure I understood what the conclusion was?
Yeah.
Can I draw something really quick? So,
yeah.
So if you, let's say we were doing GS2 second-up package, there are two static patches, very badly drawn. And it's like with Schrindler vacuum versus Minkowski vacuum, right? You could have the kind of analog of Schrindler vacuum here, or you could have the global vacuum here.
So you would have to cut the circles and then insert the twist operators or something.
Right. Right. Yeah, by the way, we can do that with this TT bar if we want to forget the static patch by itself. ask the same question.
Yes.
Can I ask more?
But that wasn't the answer. I was just trying to ask if everybody here.
But this is like, I think Eva was saying, like a more particular example where you find it's, you can do calculations. And well, Huang is asking like whether this proof of purity still applies for the like singles like set of the static patch.
Right, but I thought the analog was just static patch.
Would be like
vacuum, there's some state associated with the static patch would be analogous to the Rindler vacuum as opposed to being analogous to the Minkowski vacuum state.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I was trying to say.
I think so the question was whether this proof that Chemin said applies also when you consider only a portion of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
That's not apply.
Okay.
So the static patch is not pure.
Good.
You mean in?
In the global state.
Everybody knows it's not pure in the global state, right?
Yeah. But the question is whether this line of our argumentation would seem to say that it's pure, and we're saying that it does not say that it's pure. So we all agree that for the global vacuum, the static patch is not pure.
Yeah.
Yes, we all do all
agree. But, I think the question is a priori you don't know this is described by a global state or not. You don't know what state this describes. For example, you don't know what that state is, right? It's not purely the, for example, it's not purely the hydrologic state. It's some like master state.
Can I ask one more bit? So when you connect these dots, right?
Yeah.
For example, you're imagining a formula for trace rho squared, which is, can we write sum over ij, rho ij, rho ji, right?
Yeah, rho ij?
Yeah, let's write ji. Sum over ij, can rho ij, rho ji, right? But that assumes that the basis of the vector space labeled by I and j is orthonormal. But here we know that when we label the geometries by these circles, the basis is not orthonormal, right? So why can we use these dashes connected here to compute the trace rho squared, for example?
Not alpha.
Sorry?
This is basis independent, right?
Sorry?
Yeah.
This is basis independent.
It's not a basis.
No, but trace rho squared is basis independent, but when we compute it as sum over ij, rho ji, that's the expression we are trying to draw here. The dashes are representing the fact that the j and the I are connected.
Well, if I and j, one of them is contravariant and one is covariant index, then it is basis independent.
No? There's no con. Oh, sorry. I'm just.
So the indices are different character on the density matrix, I guess.
Well, I'm just saying if we have just some matrix.
But you can always do your favorite.
I'm saying this basis as drawn here, these bases that is represented by the circles, is not orthonormal. Right?
No, but you're just using that to glue, and then it doesn't matter what basis you use.
You glue it with the inner products on the circles.
Yeah, but is there a non-trivial thing that we should be putting when we stitch these two circles together? Right. It's not just J connects to J. Is the question making sense?
Wow. That non-trivial thing is the inner product.
Sorry?
That non-trivial thing is the inner product.
Yeah, is the inner product just gluing J to J, or does it come with an extra structure, right? Like, it could have been rho AB, rho CD, and some matrix MBC, MDA, right? And that matrix M could have been non-trivial, if it was not just delta BC.
You're worried about the inner product measure. Right, I can.
In particular,
I'm not sure what you have in mind exactly, but with a definite measure, you define this trace of rho, right? Then you define this for trace rho squared with two inner product measures, and this.
Can I write something?
Yeah, you can write something.
So essentially, what we're doing is like rho squared, right? Two rows, and we are thinking of inserting a complete set here, and another complete set. And the complete set we have imagined is just sum over these geometries, right? The geometry and the geometry. This is only true for, not true for any arbitrary set that I can write here, right? The summation has to go over an orthonormal basis, or like Douglas pointed out to me the other day, over some coherent state basis or something. Like one, I can't just pick an arbitrary set of elements of a vector space and write one equals GG for some set G, right? G in some subset of the vector space.
But can you always diagonalize one to be in the diagonal basis?
Yeah, but have we done that here? That's my question. Have we cut out the redundancy because the inner products are not orthonormal?
But if there's the short answer is I have not thinking about that question. But I think if there's any redundancies, when you divide it by trace rho to the n, this redundancy should cancel.
If you define the dashed lines to include an insertion of the inverse of the inner product matrix,
Right, but we've not done that here, right?
You can define that. Yes, you can define it like that, I think, right?
But would it still be just summing over these wormholes then? Because then you have a non-trivial matrix inserted on each of those dashed lines, right?
But this is just a statement of the boundary condition. So whatever you insert it, the argument only rely on trace rho to the n and a trace rho to the M have the same boundary conditions. That is a statement regardless of how you define the basis.
It's not going to change this conclusion.
Okay, yes.
Right. Okay, well, that's all about the general remark. And
Can I something else before you? This boundary condition here could be anything. For example, it could be a compact hyperbolic space instead of a sphere or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What does this wave function prefer?
You are thinking about a special model where you only have the theta.
Like at the level you're talking about it, does it prefer a particular, where does it have most of its probability, does it prefer?
Right, for example, in the ordinary case where there's only finite amount of matter, I think the conclusion will be this one dominates, so it will prefer like a very large sphere.
But sphere?
I'm not sure about the... Right, you are talking about whether it prefers the spatial geometries.
Yeah, because there's an infinitude of hyperbolic possibilities. Does it prefer one or the other?
What does it prefer?
I think the one that was always found to prefer this, the S3. No one found one that's more accurate. You can evaluate it on some particular geometries.
I think if a hyperbolic space, then you've got some negative prop, e to the minus something. If it's flat, you've got e to the like something zero. And if it's a sphere, you've got e to the positive something. So you always prefer for sphere.
Another although there's an infinite
of the there's a theorem.
No, but there are subtleties of this. For example, I think I remember that if you calculate these things with, for example, toroidal boundaries, then there's an obvious modulus parameter, and there's some issue of, isn't there like a, of course, a question of what the measure is a moduli space that you define by this. And I thought there was some sort of divergence that came from very degenerate tori, computed in simple models in naive ways. I'm not really sure what this means, but I think just stating that the sphere has the least action for any one boundary condition is not equivalent to saying it dominates.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, even without the moduli space, there's a discrete infinitude of these.
Right. This was a concrete illustration.
Yeah.
Sure. We discussed this separately, but what about we should include here future boundaries that are disconnected or have multiple boundaries, and then you need to modify this argument?
Well, we discussed that. To me, it isn't physical to consider about multiple boundaries, but maybe Dan will talk about it. But I will say that it's because this is a discussion section, so so I have something else to discuss, but I don't want to take all the time, because I know Yimi wants to talk, and maybe who else also want to discuss about this either? Because I'm fine with just stop at this point with a general remark, or I can continue to discuss about simple toroid models where some interesting thing happens, but we write it in our paper.
Well, can I make a request that you keep referring to Don and Henry disagreeing? Can we just hear what the debate is?
Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
Go for it, Henry. If you thought of this one, maybe more than I had recently. Or I'll say a few words while you're assembling your thoughts.
Yeah.
Which is just so from our point of view. I've been here for longer than I intended. Okay. So from our point of view, it seems natural to sum over all possibilities with arbitrary numbers of boundaries and arbitrary numbers of connected components and so forth. And so the words I'm going to say while Henry's warming up to say more contentful things are just, if you do that, it seems manifest that, for example, this density matrix of the universe is just the square, if you will, of the wave function of the universe. And in particular, if you compute the purity of the density matrix of the universe, it's pure. The point being the following. If I define, here, this, I'm, this will be some short comment. If I define this density matrix of the universe as the sum over all geometries, which I guess, what are we trying to do? Okay, it's the sum over all geometries with arbitrary numbers of boundaries. And now if I compute the square of that in any natural way, it will again be the sum over all possible universes with arbitrary numbers of boundaries. So it's the same. Or said differently, if the wave function of the universe is the sum, is defined by summing over all geometries with no past boundary, but arbitrary number of future boundaries, like so.
You lose a few terms, right? The rho squared would have minimum 4, and the rho will have minimum 2.
The rho squared
will have minimum 4.
The one option in all possible boundaries is no boundaries whatsoever.
Yeah.
Does it mean that these two things are equivalent, either we sum up all the geometries with some certain boundary condition, or with some geometry with all the boundary conditions?
Now, let's see. I wanted to say if I compute this, that should be the same as this row. And now, why is that true? Because this thing looks like it only connects either, let's see, future boundaries to future boundaries or past boundaries to past boundaries. Oh, that's, yeah.
How do you get left any boundaries?
What's that?
How do you get left with any boundaries once you leave them in this case?
Once I do this?
Yeah.
So there are boundaries from this one and boundaries from this one, and I'm not contracting them, I'm not doing anything with them. So I have all the boundaries left from here and all the boundaries left from here. Although, if we want to distinguish them as...
Sorry, Don.
Do you want to chase over the rest?
I'm not sure what I want to do.
Don.
Yeah.
Doesn't this result of rho squared equaling rho depend sensitively on the coefficients of each of these universes in this sum? It's not just you sum over all universes just willy-nilly. There's some detail.
Yeah, you'd think so. So I agree that, so this one presumably is defined by summing over all the things with some natural set of coefficients. The path integral comes with some measure that tells me how to count particular contributions that come from having some number of, some structure here to the manifold that connects them. If I'm going to do this, just like in this case, you know, the path integral has to tell me what number to assign here.
But these coefficients are not determined by requiring that rho squared equals rho?
Well, right. Some good definition of the path integral should tell me what these coefficients are. And then I guess you'd like me to check that in some sense when I square this, I get the same coefficients here.
Exactly.
Okay.
Is this a conjecture or a calculation or what?
Well, let's see. So as I told you, I'm just stalling so Henry can say something. but the idea is that, or the thinking here is that we want to compute rho squared. Okay. So what is okay? I'll be more a little bit more concrete. Rho squared is going to involve taking. Now, two sums, because each row is a sum. And the terms look like take some, I'm not going to try to draw this again, take some term from row. Here, it's a simple term from row. And take another term from the other row. Here we go. Like so. And then, as Raghu was emphasizing, we need to figure out how to sew these things together, what it means to compute, to multiply a state here by a state here. Okay, from at least the perspective that Henry and I are using, and that a lot of people think is natural, the inner product should be defined by the path integral. So what it means to glue together a Keck part of this row to a bra part of this row is to use a path integral to connect them. So you draw something like that.
Sorry, but the path integral, do you really mean the inverse path integral? Because
I'm going to simplify this. I really prefer a Heisenberg picture discussion where we don't have to where there's bras and kefs, but calling something a past boundary or a future boundary makes life complicated. Let's think of these all as living at the past boundary or the future boundary. In that case, it's whatever is the path integral that connects two boundaries. Think of it as Schwinger-Keldysh, that if these are all future boundaries, it's a Schwinger-Keldysh path integral. It starts in the future and then goes back to the future.
I was just thinking about what you would do in the Wheeler-DeWitt, sort of the Lorentzian case, maybe, which is that, you know, if you define a state by a path integral, then you have diffeomorphism and you glue it to something else, you have diffeomorphism symmetry that says it didn't really matter where you put in that division.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is implemented by saying that if you define that the inner product is sort of the inverse of the quadratic form defined by the path integral between two slices.
I think the inner product is the quadratic form defined by that.
There was an old story that I think you need to insert the Wheeler-DeWitt operator there.
The path integral computes the Wheeler-DeWitt operator. I can see we're going to drift off into many other things.
Suppose there are, you know, five circles on the boundary.
Yeah.
Which circle gets glued to which circle?
Doesn't matter. You do the path integral to figure out what the... The path integral could give you a non... So yes. So here's two states, one with four circles, one with one circle. We have to decide. We have to do a computation to find out if these two states are orthogonal. I agree with Raghu. I shouldn't just be declaring what the inner product is, even when there are many different connected components to the universe. So I claim the natural way to do this is to compute the path integral that connects this with this, and that defines the inner product.
Justify what I meant by saying the inverse. Maybe if we took a simple case where everything is a cylinder, so it has two boundaries.
Yeah.
If you want to write an equation like rho squared equals rho, that if the cylinder is something like a metric where the indices are three geometries or something, if I want to contract the GIJ upstairs with a GKL upstairs, I'd better have the inverse of that downstairs.
Your point is that an explicit form for a resolution of the identity in terms of the states involves the inverse matrix for the matrix That's inner right. products. I completely agree. Yes. Yeah, so there's an inverse that comes in. Yeah, Douglas.
In this way of thinking about it, what are some observables?
Oh, good grief. That's a great question. I'm going to use this shirt and punt on that. Let me not answer that now. Since I was up here just to kill time for a minute, let me finish this comment, and I'm going to sit down, and we'll see if something more contentful is said. But the idea is, if you glue these things together using the path integral, okay, then by construction, it should be true, if we think through all the details, that rho squared is just rho. This should be given by all the possible ways to fill in these boundaries and connect things up.
So is this supposed to be related to the fact that in quantum gravity, the center is supposed to be a maximally mixed state in the static path somehow?
I don't know. All I said was if you write down this thing, which Don Page calls the density matrix of the universe, but you write it down with an arbitrary number of components for the universe and you use this rule for sewing, I think you find that that particular density matrix is pure.
I'm happy to take Eva's
point of view.
The fact that rho equals rho squared,
that
it's like every state has equal probability. I think of that.
Rho squared is just to project.
With the normalized things, of course.
After you normalize things, it'll be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it could have a projector, yeah, but all the states that have any probability
had the same probability.
With equal probability.
Right.
And that may seem very strange, but I'm just saying that it's actually what you expect on other considerations if you look at the static patch of the center.
Right.
That is, suppose we believe, as we probably all believe, that horizon entropy is really EVA over 4 microstates. You can look at the static patch of the center. In quantum field theory, term space-time, it looks like a thermal distribution. So as immediately given, it appears to be a state where the probabilities differ. However, if you work through the first law, you find that the states of lower probability are precisely the ones where, by the gravity, the area of the horizon is lower.
Okay.
So if you said, I really know that there's EVA over 4 states per area, and you count the probability of each microstate, you find they're all equal.
Also, I just want to second that, but we do have this explicit counting based, you know, in using this TT bar with the cutoff at the right level that leads, you know, what the kind of thing you're saying to a maximum mixed density matrix with a count of states that's the dress version of this universal number of states that you get if you stop at where the seed CFT has delta plus delta bar equals C over 6. So it's a very, it's true that there's a maximum mixed density matrix. But all of those calculations, let me back up and just say that the thing that matches to is the area of the sphere in the middle of the Penrose diagram, which you can interpret as a static patch horizon. But I would agree with the general theme here that it would be interesting to understand how in that gravity calculation, which so far didn't involve explicitly these wormholes, you know, if those contribute something that changes that or corrects it. And it seems like this goes beyond just the standard Ryutaki-Nagy sort of result.
Yeah, I don't even know how you do Ryutaki-Nagy at the center in the first place. The justification I gave for what I just said is really looking at first-order gravitational perturbations to the center like a first law. And if you want to make a really big perturbation, presumably we need, first of all, a definition of exactly which surface we want to look at the area of, other such definitional questions. All I'm saying is that this seems to agree with something you could have maybe less convincingly argued for by this way, and maybe it would be worth trying to extend these arguments.
Well, in terms of what Ryutaki-Nagy is, it's just the, you know, gravitational path integral having divided the system according to some saddle point and treating it semi-classically, and you do get a maximally mixed state.
Maybe I can make some comment how that, can I get the microphone?
Oh, yes, please.
I did want to object to the shirt, though.
You want to object to the shirt?
Yeah, I know. I want to object to the shirt.
To discuss the entropy of a subregion in the center space, do we have to be able to put conical excesses in the geometry?
Yeah, but we don't know how to do this in this simple case. This is the calculation we did with Shi and Gonzalo, where the conical excess can be understood by a very simple orbital projection and the area of it. So we calculate all the Rényi entropies in that way.
But is it obvious that the entropy is something that you're allowed to compute to begin with because it involves?
Well, my view of that is, as I said at the conference, is that it's an approximate notion, but a very good approximation, given that the two sectors here have a large sweep, and the path integral that you do over the residual gravity in that framework has a saddle point of reproduces the Ryutaki-Nagy. So, again, it's like any counting you do in real time, like counting the protons and atoms and whatnot, it's not absolutely precise, but it's well-defined, it's a well-defined calculation at large sweeps.
It feels like the observable, though, that it might not be an entropy, it might be an expectation value of some operator that you put in that creates the conical excess. I'm not sure if we should interpret that as an entropy.
Well, it's the replica trick. At the level of the semi-classical gravity calculation, it's the standard replica trick.
But I don't think there's a standard replica. You're not obviously allowed to do any replica trick in gravity. Like, you can, on the boundary, you can put conical excesses, because you're allowed to study it on any metric you want.
Well, this isn't a conical excess on each boundary of these two sectors. It's the whole boundary. And, of course, I agree with you that this is, at best, some approximation. But what's going on is you have two sectors that both live in the same space. That space time fluctuates, but what you're doing is tracing out one of the two large C sectors, and you get from that a dominant contribution, which is this max-min-max state at, you know, large C. So, given that you have the saddle point for the residual gravity integral in, say, two dimensions. So I think it's justified by this, you know, in the same way that we can do many calculations in low, you know, field theory or even gravity with a large C sector that contributes the dominant contribution. In the context of doing a Ryu Takinagi calculation in general, you take seriously the saddle point for the part of the RT surface that goes inside. Here, you know, what's absent is the part that goes all the way to the asymptotic ABS boundary, but the part that that we have that is given, you know, for which the path integral has a clear saddle point. At large radius, large C and large lambda tip, you know, that part of it is, I think, technically completely analogous to the part of it that we take seriously in the Ryu Takinagi
calculation. I think the difference is that in the conventional Ryu Takinagi discussion, there's no conical excess anywhere in the bulk. It's only on the boundary.
Isn't that the case in your case, Eva? I thought that it somehow smoothed it out, and then your answer was independent of n.
Well, it is independent of n as the result of the calculation.
At the risk of derailing this discussion, I think it's an interesting problem to understand how we go from the sharp, let's say, definition of RT, well, or entropy as Douglas just mentioned, to one where gravity is weak, right? So you have, let's say, the entropy of a black hole. I mean, if the outside is, you know, has no gravity, then we understand how to define it. Mm-hmm. But what if the outside has some weakly coupled theory of gravity? How do we go over to standard definition?
And do we know?
I don't know. Yeah, there should be some, because if one understood this well, there would be some, you know, epsilons or whatever, and to what extent you can calculate it.
I don't even the motivation for why you should expect something like that to work, apart from the fact
that the motivation is that it's present in everything we say, many of the things we say about black holes, right? We say we have a black hole and it's in some flat space and it has some entropy. We imagine that we draw a sphere around it and there's some entropy inside.
I agree with that and with the general question as well, but just one last comment. I mean, we know perfectly well what to do with conical singularities in, say, large radius string theory. They are orbital singularities, and you know, they make sense. So, in this calculation, it's true that one
one version of the calculation anyway involves such a projection with such a conical singularity. And, you know, just by symmetry, it's very easy to see that the length of the saddle point circle that enters into the, that gives the area of the appropriate arch surface that stays. So that's the statement of the maximum XA.
Yeah, in the view of time, I'll very go quickly about, about the one simple model in our paper, and then I'll ask let Yiming Chen to describe maybe a more concrete model. But
what question are you answering?
Oh, I just tell you a model where this different different density matrix plays a role in this simple model. That's the sum of other geometries of for the density matrix that plays an important role in this simple model. In particular, the question I'm asking is, why is this, two questions, why is this other geometries become important? And for most of the cases, that other geometry is negligible. The other is, what does this geometry have effect on the entropies of subregion in the Decedar space? And as the answer will be, it's easy to answer the second question, in that there's a page curve in the Decedar space. So the simple model we're describing will be 2D Decedar space. So for 2D Decedar space, so it's a JT Decedar. It has a future time slice which describes a Schwarzschild bounding condition, but it's evolved in a Lorentzian direction along the time slice. And in the simple model we are considering is we project this this boundary by two end of world brings, start from location I, start from this location and then this location. And we imagine we measure the total length of this future boundary to be L. And then we assign the internal degree freedom of the end of world brings by putting the index I and j. In particular, we imagine I and j running from 1 to k. So we write down the density matrix for this, the no boundary density matrix for this state. Then we have I, j, I prime, j prime. Then we have two, in the leading order, we have two states. One is this one, and another is this connected geometry. So let's first look at this one. So this one, because of end world brings, the indexes need to be the same. So this one gives us det ij times det I prime j prime. So this is the usual analog of the Hartree-Hawking state, where the matter is in a bunch delta state. So they are maximally entangled in this model. And it has weight e to the 2s naught, because each disk have, we have topological terms, so each disk have e to the s naught. And this one, on the other hand, we got something else. This I and I prime are contract, so we got that I prime, and that j, j prime. So this describe times e to the s naught. So this state describes a maximum mixed state, because this is bra and ket. So bra and ket are maximally entangled. We have
I tensor j.
Here we have I, j, j. So that's the difference. So for the real geometry, we should sum over all these two geometries. So we have a pure density matrix plus a mixed density matrix. So explicitly, this is a mixed density matrix. And we can estimate when any for when this geometry dominates over any this geometry for any observables. For that, it's a simple. Just it's enough just to look at the relative norm of these two states. So this state, when I take inner product here, only the matter contact is I and j. We got with contract these indexes. We got k times e to the 2s naught. And here, when we do the contract, we have two loops, and we get k squared times e to the s naught. So we see that once we increase the matter in this theory, then we have a transition of the dominance of the two geometries. When matter is small, we get the usual Hartree-Hawking state. But when we increase the matter, we got this new geometry that dominates over our density matrix. So it's for our observables. This is in contrast with the black hole case in two sense. First, in the black hole case, the density matrix isn't changed. It's always described the same density matrix. There's no any phase transition of the density matrix. But in our model, there's a phase transition. In other, the second point is, for the replica wormhole case, the transition in black hole is a transition for comparison of exponential small numbers. Because we calculate trace rho to the n, one is e to the minus s, and one is like 1 over k. It's a transition, like computation of exponential small terms. But in decider, here it's a computation of exponential large terms. This is both k and e to the s not are large. So that looks like a little bit weird to me for the decider case.
And what does it correspond to physically? What's the transition to? I mean, it's not a decider evaporation.
No, here is not. Yeah, so if you look at the Lorentzian geometry of this geometry, then it looks like there's a singularity at time t equal to zero. And this singularity. And this geometry is like kind of go around the singularity. I don't know any more physical intuition on that. But maybe it's related to when you have a lot of matter, this geometry becomes unstable, and there's new effective description, which including a new geometry.
So it's not within a single dynamical evolution that you would see a transition in just a family of...
Well, that's an interesting question. So actually, I don't know whether this can happen in just ordinary, say, decider expanding and where the matter fields become increasing. Yeah.
Shouldn't you first normalize your states?
The normalization of the state will sum of these two.
I thought the normalization would have been something like k squared e to the 2s naught.
No, the normalization will k e to the 2s naught plus k squared e to the s naught over. So it's the other one.
Just so I understand correctly, you're considering the something inside the sitter with k states in your evolution?
I consider about just manually increasing the k states in this model. You can consider about the evolution. I haven't done that. And maybe Yiming has done that, so let's wait.
And you can fit that inside of the... You can fit that if k is open larger than the...
Good. That's the second point. Okay. So regarding whether you can fit that many state in decider, right? Let's consider about the entropy of the partial system. Right? So here we have like a large amount of matter, and as a classical solution, there's no problem of fitting this large number of states. But we were wondering like whether it's like quantum mechanically is well defined.
Sorry. So even classically, if you were to insist that you have the neck of the sitter, you can't.
I think that's analog of this transition.
Are you saying you're much to the future of the neck in general here?
I'm not saying that. I think here this two dimensional model is like the transverse area is almost like constant, has a future direction. So here I'm doing like fitting much more states that I can in this little space. But
sorry, I'm just trying to ask you, if you send too much in toward the neck, it crunches from
the
other side.
Yes.
Which side of that are you on? Are you always staying below the threshold where you would cause a crunch at the neck, or are you?
I want to, by doing that, I want to go beyond that.
Beyond that threshold, so therefore you don't care if you have the neck.
Yes.
Okay. I think it's in the future, and then the second case, it would not be the geometry of the sitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what the singularity. Yeah.
In the past, not in the future, right? You still describe.
I'm putting putting a lot of state in the future, and then look at the past. It will be not purely to see the judge.
And they all have square plus.
Yeah, they all have square plus. Square plus future time size.
And these are states, I think they're late time states. And then if you do, that are prepared by a Euclidean path integral. But if you do Lorentzian evolution backwards, then you would see either smooth geometry or singular, depending on how big k is.
Okay. So the order parameters is how much stuff there is.
Yeah.
And it might be that the de Sitter entropy really has to do with what's going on at the neck. And
yes.
If you go further, there might be more room.
Right. So regarding to the de Sitter entropy, one interesting feature is that when we consider about entropy of subregion, so in this in the geometry where this dominates, the entropy were given by log k. But when after doing this phase transition, the entropy were bounded by S naught, which is the de Sitter entropy. So to see that, I will just talk about the second unit. Entropy calculations. So I have a contract with I indices and J contract with the two rows, and here I normalize by trace rho squared. So when the limit where k is much smaller than e to the s naught, those geometry tend to fill in like this. That's the same as black hole calculation, so everyone should be familiar. So this one will give you like 1/k. For 1k loop and e to the 4 s naught, I have a 2k loop and 4 e to the s naught, I get a 1/k. On the other hand, in the other limit where k is much larger than e to the s naught, then these geometries tend to be connected. So instead, we got So the matter loops have four loops in the denominator, they cancel. And here I get e to the s naught. Here I get e to the 2 s naught. So I get e to the minus s naught. So this seems to give us entropy of subregion is bounded by s naught. So this calculation really indicates that in this model it's really described the initial condition of the not necessarily initial, but this de Sitter space is described by a Hilbert space that's bounded by e to the s naught. Okay. Right. So that's a rule that if you that's what you got if you apply the rule of summing of all geometries that are compatible with a future boundary condition. I think that's a preferred rule that the replica wormhole calculation teaches us that we should not really forget about those geometries. When we consider about more realistic systems. And I'll let Yiming Chen to talk.
I'll make sure to wrap up in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll try to be quick. Yeah, basically I plan to talk about some model that is based on discussion with Juan and Victor. That's basically an East Coast version of this de Sitter model. Because of the time, I talk about the most simple example. So let us discuss like the Poincaré patch of de Sitter. And let me draw the parents diagram. Something like this. So this is the eta direction. And so as people have already addressed, it's hard to define the entropy of a subsystem like in the de Sitter region because of the, basically, if you define this way, it's not, I think it's not gauge invariant because those boundary points will also fluctuate. So to address this question, we did something that like people did in the black hole case, that we join this de Sitter space to a non-gravitational flat space region. Physically, what this will correspond to is that like the universe exists inflation at some late time and becomes like the gravitational effect becomes weak. But for now, let me do this. And so the metric up here is Cs squared equals to epsilon squared So it's flat metric. And this line is eta equals to minus epsilon. So we also have a, so let's discuss this problem in JT gravity. So we also have a dilaton field on the background, which is 5 to 5 0 plus phi r divided by minus eta. Okay. Okay, now let me discuss, like, in this flat space region that without gravity, let me pick like a subregion like this and compute the entropy of this subregion. So basically, I put a conformal field on this background, which has central charge C, and ask, what's the entropy of this region? So a naive answer would be that the entropy is given by C divided by 6. So the distance between these two twist operators delta x. This is the naive answer that you get if you do not include this replica wormholes. But I think the lesson that like Zhenbing want to address is that we should also sum over other geometries. For example, here what we are actually doing is to do a Schringer Kaldish contour that we go from eta equals to minus infinity to some, let me call this place eta zero, and then we go back, right? And in this calculation, we are evaluating the twist operator, the expectation of twist operator at this point. So let me also draw this figure like this. We actually have two sheets of the Cedar space, right? One sheet is corresponding to the cat part, and the other sheet is corresponding to the bra part. Okay. So now, say we have two replicas. What will happen? So now we can have many different possibilities of joining the geometry. For example, we can join this cat to this bra, and also this cat to this bra. That will correspond to what Zhenbing said, that the universe is described by the mid-state. But we haven't really found a good example of that. Another thing that we can do is to join like this part, this cat to this cat. And the third possibility is that we can join this bra to this bra. So what can happen is that there will be some emergent twist operator here and here. Basically, when you do the path integral, if you go down from here and reach this cut, then you jump to this replica. And also, if you go down from here, then you jump to this replica. Okay.
That are ultimately fluctuate, but again, you're using large C to make it a good approximation. Is that what you think about this?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So the X's on the top are like in a non-gravitating region.
Yeah. And here, there's no gravity region.
The X's below are not twist operators. That's a cartoon of the topology. That's a completely smooth geometry.
Yeah.
It has the same topology as if you had put twist operators there, but it's actually a smooth geometry.
Okay, that's great.
And
once again, we do know what to do with
colors. Okay. Okay, so in this case, basically this is the picture for two replicas, and we can do like n replicas and then take the n goes to one limit. So after that, the gravity part will give us, like you will have the RT contribution from these two points. That will give you 2 phi 0 plus 2 phi r divided by minus eta star. Let me call the position of this emergent twist operator eta star. Okay. So that's from the gravity part. But from the matter part, basically we need to evaluate like the expectation value of the correlation function of four twist operators. But we can consider a limit that these two twist operators are far separated. So basically, the correlation function factorizes into these two and these two. We take the OPE limit. And then what we get is the measure power is simply 2 times C divided by C. So here I have a, sorry.
I'm really sorry, Jennifer. I just want to understand, how is that not gravitational? How do you manage to have a cosmology that transitions to something completely non-gravitational?
Well, in this model, it's a toy model. So I think this is the same question that we've discussed. Like, in our universe, we imagine that we live in a time that the gravitational effect is relatively weak. So we can define.
It's weak when it's there, and it can
be for all. But this is a toy model that we cut off the gravitational effect at some particular time. It's a kind of approximation of our universe.
And can I ask, what fixes eta star?
I haven't reached that step yet. Okay. Yeah, so after I collect this gravity part and the matter part, I need to extremize over all possible eta star.
What is the I pi?
Yeah, here it is because basically the correlation function of these two twist operator can be given by an analytic continuation from Euclidean result. So by that continuation, you get these extra imaginary phases. But this will cancel in the final expression for the entropy because you have two contributing sedos. One is from the sedo that joins cat, and the other is the sedo joins bra and bra. So these two, the imaginary parts will cancel between the two. So the final answer is, let me call this S island, it's 2 pi 0. Okay, and now if we extremize over at the start. We get the following result. So basically we get that there can be an island, let me call this an island, that is like time-like separated to the original region that you are considering. And the separation, we can quantify the separation of this island to the end of the Sitter inflation by the number of e-folding in this region. So the number of e-folding of this is log 6, 5 boundary divided by C. The 5 boundary is the boundary value of the dilaton. So this can be a large number, or this can also be a small number, depending on the parameter that you choose.
So what's the physical meaning of the island in this case? What's the set of words that say that?
You mean how to interpret this island, like in ADS case? Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, that's a good question. That's the question that we want to study.
This calculation is identical to the extremal dipole case?
Yeah.
So that point is really very close to the extreme horizon. So it's like very deep in the past.
I would say it depends on. You mean this point?
Yeah.
Depends on this.
This is like more homogeneous than times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an issue that it's time-like separated. That's very troubling to me.
This is what we get from the calculation. So, it seems the interpretation must be very different from like the ADS case.
Yeah.
I should say that we haven't really defined this kind of island in higher dimensional case. So it might be just a special feature of JT gravity.
So what lesson are you supposed to extract?
There is one last thing that I want to mention is that for this island contribution to win, you need this delta x to be very large. Basically, you need that delta x to be like something of order e to the 6 phi 0 divided by c. So that means that if you trace back the patch corresponding to this delta 0, in this region, the number of e folding is like is of order of the phi 0. So in ADS, we understand the phi 0 as the entropy of the black hole, but in this de Sitter case, I'm not sure how to interpret that.
So is there something like the Page curve story where you don't expect this entropy should be able to exceed a certain amount?
Yeah. That's,
why not? Because it's in a non-compact. I mean, it's not like it's enclosed in a de Sitter static patch or anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a huge amount of, you know, many, many, many Hubble patches in the future. So it would be an extraordinarily strong statement to say there's not a lot of.
If you plug in this extreme limit to the entropy formula, what do you get? What does it look like?
Oh, I didn't write down the equation, but yeah. You mean plug this back here? Yeah, because this term is the largest term.
So the largest amount of entropy you can have in this de Sitter space is 250.
Yeah, that's tempting to say that.
But why are you saying that again? Oh, I mean,
sorry?
What, can you explain the logic behind
I think what Amel wants to say is that when delta x is large enough, like you consider a region that is large enough, then when you calculate the entropy, this island contribution will dominate. So you use this formula to evaluate the entropy. And after you plug this value into this formula, you get something like phi 0 plus some corrections. So it's basically the largest piece is this phi 0 piece, which means the entropy will not exceed some value.
Do you still add the contribution from the non-gravitational region?
What do you mean, contribution from that region?
Well, I mean in the black hole case, the sum of the two, right? The entropies.
You just mean the matter part.
Yeah.
That's going to be subdued.
Well, it's not if delta x is very large like that. I mean, isn't it just log delta x? It's not the same order.
No, that is this entropy. You mean this entropy?
Yeah.
But I'm comparing like this entropy with this entropy I get from the island formula.
But shouldn't you include a term from the matter as well in the island formula or not?
There is,
no.
There is
it's there.
It's included. It's a
Oh, you mean this
term? So that term is also going to be smaller than the phi naught term.
Is this calculation literally a calculation of, you know, the entropy from the path integral? Or is it invoking a formula, an island formula for de Sitter that hasn't been derived in that sense? Or?
Well,
you effectively derived it just now.
I think you are saying that basically, I'm doing a path integral on a replicated Schrödinger Kaldish contour, but we only like include this particular saddle, like the saddle that joins the cat and cat. But as Zhenbin said, we might also need to include other kinds of contribution, like contribution that joins cat and bra and other contribution. But we haven't found a good example. So I can only say that this contribution seems already, it gives you a result of entropy that is smaller than that amount. There might be other corrections.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of what you're comparing to, what's the reason for the epsilon in the denominator? Why is the entropy regulated by the distance to the
you mean this one?
Boundary. Yeah.
Maybe it's both it's a different epsilon. Yeah, epsilon prime.
So it's an arbitrary cutoff?
It's the field theory.
Yeah, it's a cutoff, but the point is that that cutoff appears both in this formula and in this formula. So when you compare the two, you the cutoff will not matter.
So it's the scaling with log of delta x that should saturate, you think, or you seem to be getting. But that's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Kim had said in the past that inflation couldn't last more than S E foldings and so on. Based on the. I think it was based on not running into a Tamlin inflation. So you wanted to have a slow roll. This was a paper by Nima
and others.
Lubovsky and Senatore, and I'm forgetting some other authors. So you want to have as much inflation as you want. So you want to make the slope very small. But you don't want it to make it so small that you run into a Tamlin inflation. So you want the inflation to end. And from these two constraints, they found that the maximum number of e-folds was roughly the entropy.
So there are various arguments for that. Does this, you say, is supporting that?
It seems somewhat related, as you just said, somehow related to the entropy. It's not identical, I'm just saying it's similar.
Well, this is saying how far back you have to go from the end.
Yeah, this is how far back. If you go this far back, then all these fluctuations that you have are not independent somehow. They stop generating entropy.
Well, there are two different things, right? What's actually excited and what could be excited in principle.
In two dimensions, the islands don't cost very much because the area of a very large region is still small. But in higher dimensions, they'd be very expensive because the area contribution would be very big. I wondered if you had a comment on that.
Yeah, I think that's basically the reason that we haven't found any example in higher dimensions. We considered it, but...
You're precisely for the reason you're
saying. Yeah, it's the reason.
Sorry, I didn't understand the comment. I mean, in two dimensions, the island contributions still are suppressed by this phi naught kind of term. Why isn't that like the area of the...
It doesn't grow as you make the island very big, so...
Oh, I see. In ADS, it would, because phi increases near the boundary. But in De Sitter, as long as you say, given time to the past to the future boundary, phi doesn't grow as you make the island big. This is the point.
The thing that is leading to this island is that the entropy of a very large region grows, like log of the size, but the area doesn't grow. In higher dimensions, they both grow, and they grow at the same rate, but one of them has a huge coefficient, so it seems hard to... for the island to win.
So if it had worked in higher dimensions or whatever, would this give a prediction that the center must decay? Let's do a metastable scenario.
Well, there is an if which is not true, so...
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So this is... But yeah. Well,
the answer to a question, if false, then it will work, yeah.
So what was the lesson from this?
Well, I think it's a discussion, so we are supposed to discuss the lesson. Personally, I don't understand the lesson.
No, but you're saying there's no metastable De Sitter in two dimensions, let's put it that way. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Or?
Sorry, I didn't follow.
I don't know. I don't know what the interpretation is. This is calculation.
Yeah.
Maybe an analog would be, even in higher dimensions, if you tried to put too much entropy in a De Sitter-sized region, then you would have an island.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's sort of like I said, in higher dimensions, isn't it true that each of those diagonal lines in the light cone represents an area which is just the De Sitter area? And so why can't I have a cut that approaches them and its area remains bounded by twice the De Sitter area?
They'd be considering a very large region, many horizons, with a very, very large volume and a very, very large area in higher dimension. That would be the analog of the situation that's being discussed here.
The analog.
Yeah, and both entropies grow like this area.
Can't I consider a region in higher dimensions which has a large volume, but in fact a small area? Because it ends on the two parts of the De Sitter horizon, each of which have fixed area, no matter how high they are.
It's
the De Sitter analog of the deep throat and the black hole.
What is that? I didn't think that there was an analog of that.
specific space.
Maybe you can draw it.
I'm just making a misunderstanding.
I would draw this line on this diagram. Okay. Aren't both the x's cross sections of a center horizon, and therefore both the x's have finite area, which is just set by the de Sitter scale? Pardon, I misunderstood what we mean. I mean, there could be various higher dimensional analogs.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, you can even continue that slice all the way to the point where it shrinks to zero, and it would have zero.
Yeah, we could do that, for example. Right.
Doesn't the matter stick there cheaper?
Yeah,
because it's just higher thing. So even though the area went down, the entropy also went down.
That's true.
So you need to find a region in the center space whose naive quantum field theory entropy is like much, much bigger than its area. And that seems hard to find, except in two dimensions.
So, but I'm confused. I agree if you make the cut go all the way to where the poles contract off and you just have a compact slice, that you would naturally think of that as pure, unless you entangle it with something outside the universe. But for the region that I drew, I don't see why it has to be pure. It could be. I remixed.
I think it's equal to the entropy of that is in the other remaining region. Right? So it's like computing the entropy of a little ball or
around. Yeah.
And then it's convenient to shrink it and
yeah.
decreases movement. Shrinking it, I mean, making the dots go all the way to the boundary would make both the matter and the area entropy smaller. But I don't know, maybe there is a setup in the Sitter that you have these conditions that running region.
Unless we should. Wrap up. Does anyone have any final comments?
Maybe.
We'll keep discussing over lunch. Thank all the speakers.